From APM in New York, I'm Ben Johnson, and this is Marketplace Tech. The meeting between tech executives and President-elect Donald Trump's transition team did, as scheduled, happen yesterday in Manhattan at Trump Tower. People on the guest list: Amazon's Jeff Bezos, Google's Larry Page, Apple's Tim Cook, Tesla's Elon Musk, Facebook's Sheryl Sandberg, and more. Everybody sat around a big table. There were tech people looking somewhat uncomfortable in their suits. Outside, there was Politico's Tony Rahm, who waited with the other reporters in the lobby and then got booted from Trump Tower to make way for a Christmas party. We got Tony on the phone and asked him to tell us about the view from the ground floor.
You know, this is an attempt by the incoming Trump administration to send an olive branch to the tech industry. You know, my sources tell me that folks in the room brought up issues like high-skilled immigration. They brought up China and some of the barriers that they face to selling their products and services in a place like China. And those are things that those in the room on the Trump administration side seemed at least interested in hearing out.
As I understand it, Jeff Bezos, who has been criticized somewhat directly by the president-elect, has put out a statement following the meeting, yes?
Yeah, CEO Jeff Bezos of Amazon later said he saw an opportunity for the new Trump administration to work with the tech industry. But, you know, it's just a complete turnaround for the two of them. You know, at one point during the campaign, Trump had said that, you know, Bezos and his ownership of the Washington Post essentially amounted to a tax scam. You know, Jeff Bezos said many critical things about Trump in response. And now you have Bezos saying essentially that he thinks the two can work together. He thinks Silicon Valley can find some room to work with Donald Trump. And I think many other tech executives exiting that meeting feel similarly.
Politico's Tony Rahm, thanks very much. We'll see how President Trump deals with the tech industry in 2017. Speaking of next year, the social discovery platform Pinterest released its Pinterest 100 this week, a peek at the 100 trends that will supposedly be big next year. The company's more than 150 million monthly users pin or save everything from recipe ideas to clothing to home decor on the website. So Pinterest gets a lot of data on what those users plan to buy. Larkin Brown is a researcher at Pinterest, and she joins me now to talk about the future and the past as defined by pinners. Larkin, thanks for talking.
Thanks so much for having me.
Top trends. Break it down for me. Make me cool in 2017.
So we're seeing, you know, vegetarian, vegan, other dietary restriction recipes are very popular on Pinterest.
Okay.
And jackfruit as the new meat substitute is one of the trends that we're seeing.
Whoa.
Yeah, you actually use it as a substitute for pulled pork.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that. I've had jackfruit. It's pulled porkish.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about clothes?
So we have Mountain Man Athleisure. And you,
that's good. I'm in that zone.
Uh-huh,
yeah, I
uh-huh.
feel I'm in that zone. Yeah.
And this is if you were to see like a lumberjack, you know, do his kind of off duty style. So that's things like, you know, an outdoorsy jacket, knit, dark jean, and then work boots instead of that sneaker, which you usually associate with athleisure.
I love this. I'm ready.
Yeah, you
I'm
are.
I'm totally ready.
Uh-huh.
Do Pinterest trends accurately reflect consumer trends?
So we're very good at spotting when you see a trend on the rise. We can tell from our internal tools if that's something that's really going to take off or if that's something that's just going to be like a little blip on the radar.
What about big trend losers of 2016?
The biggest trend loser is the skinny jean.
Skinny jean's out?
It's not out. It's okay. Moving into, it's now a classic. So it will maintain, but it is no longer the it jean.
Do you guys have any sense of the kind of like last minute shopping that people are doing for Christmas?
One thing that people do is they make explicit wish lists, right? They have a board of like gifts for me.
Yep.
To help their loved ones. But there also people use it even when, you know, if you're looking for a gift for a family member or your partner, some people will go check out their Pinterest and just kind of look either at the general aesthetic of what they've been saving or to see if there are specific products so they can buy that and make it seem like, oh, I know you so well. I know exactly what you wanted. So we see that people use Pinterest for holiday shopping a lot.
Larkin Brown is a Pinterest researcher. Larkin, thanks for coming by.
Thanks so much for having me.
We may not yet know what the year 2017 will bring in terms of technology, but your listener support of Marketplace guarantees we'll all be better informed and better prepared, flying cars or not. Make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift, in any amount, counts twice thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund. Help us keep you up to date and well-informed wherever you are. Donate at marketplace.org by December 31st. This week on Codebreaker, we're talking to people about technology to fight the impact of climate change. Nuclear power, bioengineering humans, and more are all on the docket. Another idea to fight climate change, the Power Holy Grail, a home battery that stores energy cheaply, efficiently, and for a long time. Enter Vanderbilt University's Carrie Pint.
Batteries can solve a lot of problems, and right now, the battery market is mostly focused on electronics. But actually, when you start looking at renewable energy and grid-scale storage, this becomes challenging because if I'm going to sell a consumer a battery to put out back behind their house, it has to be very cheap. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. And with the way our markets work, it's really hard to find an investor to essentially invest in something that has a large upfront hardware cost, like a manufacturing facility for grid-scale storage, but then has a very, very low profit margin where you need everyone in the world to buy one.
Who's the battery for?
This battery is something that's going to go behind your house. So this is a grid-scale battery.
When you say grid-scale, what does that mean?
It's a stationary battery that you put behind your house and you couple it with a solar cell.
Essentially, what you're saying is if you could store better the energy, then everybody could use the energy whenever they want it, then it wouldn't be such a drain on this overall system.
That's pretty much right. I mean, the challenge is, of course, that we can't predict when a cloud is going to go overhead in a community.
Right.
You know, photovoltaics and solar cells give you on-demand power. The bottleneck right now is, well, you know, where are the cheap batteries? You know, you can't buy them in the store. And for the cases that you can, like lead acid batteries, I personally wouldn't want to stick a lead acid battery behind my house with my infant and my toddler hanging around. The way to get past that is to basically build, you know, your own system.
More of Carrie Pint's story on our podcast. The website is codebreaker.codes. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.